Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hey there, welcome to the Dr. Nina Show. I'm Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, and I'm here to help you lose weight without dieting. And I'm also here to bring you some food for thought about healthy living. And today I'm very excited to have a really special guest, John Sally. Now, he was supposed to be in the studio, but he got stuck in traffic. You guys know that LA traffic is horrible. So he's going to be calling in, and we're going to do it that way. So let me tell you a little bit about John. He is a wellness master, a healthy living advocate, a philanthropist, an entrepreneur, a chef, an actor, and oh yeah, a four-time NBA champion, the first NBA player to win four championships with three different teams. What doesn't he do? What don't you do, John? Are you there? Hello? John? John?
You got it? There we go.
Oh, there you go. Uh-huh. Okay. So, so first of all,
I have to apologize. My brain was doing something else. What I don't do is not appear.
No worries.
So I can finally say one time that I'm sitting there. I know Anthony is like, I got here. But I'm like, it's the day before Thanksgiving. One of my kids is going out of the country. One of my kids had basketball practice. And I'm like, Mr. Mom, so, and my wife works. So I have to literally try to do three things at once. So I apologize, Dr. Nina.
John, no apologies necessary. So I bet a lot of people out there are wondering, what can an NBA champion and a basketball legend tell them about healthy eating? And I know that the answer is a lot. And I know that they're going to love what you have to say. So let's get right to that. I know you have a really interesting story. I've heard you say that becoming a vegan actually saved your life. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah. When I was 27 years old, 26 or something, I literally went and had the cholesterol maybe of a 70-year-old man. So my cholesterol was way up in the 200s. Wow. And I was literally trying to play an NBA lifestyle, and you can't do that. Can't live that life and run up and down the court. You know, NBA players, most of us die from heart disease. I went to the NBA a couple of years ago to tell them this, and these guys are living these you know, they're going to these steakhouses, and they don't know that the fat is inside the meat. It's not just on the outside of the meat. It's inside the meat. And with us having long limbs and a bigger heart, and, you know, we get blocked in these arteries. So last year, 11 former NBA players were playing and died from heart disease before the age of 60.
So
I realized that eating six eggs a day and eating a steak, thinking that was making me strong and making me, you know, big, was not. It wasn't to my benefit. So I found out how to stop it by eating a plant-based diet. I started in 1991, and right now I'm the same weight I was when I was 25 years old, but with no high cholesterol.
It's a very inspiring story, and I really had no idea. I guess you'd think, wow, basketball players, they're active, you know, they're running around all the time. How can they possibly have health issues? But it would seem that they certainly do. And you actually bring up one of the misconceptions of a vegan diet is that you can't be strong. There's this idea that if you're vegan, you're like this sickly, pale, like person who can't get up off the couch. Tell us about...
Yeah, I was talking to this 800-pound gorilla who's a raw foodist. And I was like, man, where'd you get all those muscles? And then I was walking by talking to this unbelievable ox that was eating grass. And everyone forgets that all these strong animals they try to emulate are raw fooders. So if they can get their protein and they can get the, all the minerals and nutrients they can from green leafy vegetables, green bananas at times, you know, why can't we? What makes them think that eating an animal that eats grass makes you strong as the animal that's eating grass? That makes no sense.
Put it that way, that really does give you a mental image that makes a lot of sense. Yes, how is it that cows can and animals can be cows and animals without eating other animals? That doesn't make sense. Yeah. So I have to tell you a funny story, John. My daughter, who's 10, often says to me, "Mom, who, you know, what guests are you having on your show?" And I said to her, "I'm having a basketball player on my show." And she said, and by the way, she wouldn't know, like, the Lakers from the Bulls from the, like, she wouldn't know football from basketball from baseball. And she looks at me and she goes, "Oh, is it John Sally?" And I said, "What? How, are you psychic? How in the world do you know that my guest is John Sally?" And she goes, "Oh, he came to my school and he talked about being a vegan, and it made such an impression on me. Well, she didn't say it that way. She's like, "I totally remember him. Do you know he started playing basketball when he was in fourth grade?" And then she goes on to tell me your whole life story. So I want you to know that you're going around talking to kids and telling them about being a vegan and telling them about healthy living and talking about your health revolution. I just want you to know that whatever you're saying, it is sticking, because my 10-year-old knows more about you than I do at this point.
Well, I am so happy, because I tell them when I go to speak, I only have to get through to one person. I said, "I know there's a lot of you here, but my job is to talk to one person in here."
Well, I think you made an impression on all of them. And actually, that brings up another... Whoops. Are you there? You're there. Okay. That makes me think of another misconception, which is that being a vegan is not good for children.
Oh. Can I answer before you finish, please?
I'm finished. I'm done. I await your answer to that. John, I think we lost. Hi. Oh, back. You're back. Yes, please, please answer that misconception.
Oh, my God. Okay, so imagine how silly this is. You ready for this?
I'm ready.
When your kid is born, and if you're blessed enough to be able to breastfeed, wonderful. Right? If you're wonderful, blessing.
Yes.
But as soon as you have to give your baby any kind of food, the first thing you do is give them mashed peas, carrots, you give them everything that is this smooth, little, like you would think, like a pudding. We call it baby food. Well, there's no minced up chicken. There's no minced up beef. There's no minced up and put into a jello lamb. Why is that? The reason that is because you know it doesn't make sense to feed a child a dead animal. Not a baby. You decide, well, you need dead animal when you get your first two front teeth, because now you can chew a little bit. No. You're only giving that child a dead animal because you want to eat it. But if you were to give your kids vegetables, and the first thing they used to say on television, they got rid of it, is, "Hey, eat your vegetables if you want to be big and strong." Not eat your steak.
Mm.
Eat your vegetables if you want to be big and strong. They decided to take that out of all the TV shows you see. We used to have on television shows where people would eat as a family. Right? They would eat as a family, and they would have their vegetables, and the parents were strict on the vegetables.
And Popeye ate spinach. And Popeye ate spinach to be strong, right?
Only.
Yeah.
Right. And he dated a very thin girl who obviously didn't know how to tell a bully, "I'm not interested." But that's a whole other story. So if you're going to do that, and I say this to people, I say, if you really know, one of the first things they do when you're going to get in shape, you see all the vegetables on a person's plate. They also put, they put fish and they put chicken without any skin because they still are stuck in their brain. But the truth is, you either, you don't get a green shake with some chicken blended up in it. When you want a protein shake, or you're getting a green shake, or you're going to Creation, or you're going to all these different places, cold pressed juicery, you're going there because you say, I want to drink something healthy. You know it's healthy. You know that this is good for you. You know, everyone knows, but they just like the taste of a dead animal because they've been trained to like the taste of a dead animal. The funny, as soon as you take it out of their system, and I tell people, when you stop feeding the parasite that is requesting and demanding meat, your life changes. Your life changes because your brain opens up. You start seeing the light. That's why vegans are so annoying to people, because they're like born-again Christians. Once they're born again, they see the light. They see it differently. And they start, and they, in their brain, they start saying, why doesn't everyone see this? How can't you see that what you're eating is dead and it's not nourishing your body? You can't put dead D batteries in a boom box and expect the box to boom. Makes no sense. So when they said it's not good for a child, what's not good for a child is an uneducated, ignorant parent.
Yes. You know, my child, you'll know what school this is, but she goes to a vegan school. The school is vegan, and they have their own vegan... I'm not vegan. I'm more vegetarian. But the school has its own vegan kitchen, and the kids learn about being vegan, and they're all thriving, and they're all healthy, and they're all doing great. So what's good for kids is good for all of us.
Yeah. Well, what you know, in order to make you grow big and strong, is your vegetables. You know that. Everyone knows it. And I'm sorry, Dr. Nina, to be so pushed with that, but I would hear it because it doesn't make any sense. It's like, well, as soon as you hear somebody says, where are you going to get your protein? As soon as you hear those words come out of somebody's mouth, you know it's programmed. Because the truth is, you don't get protein really out of eating that meat. You get B12 and you get animal fat and you get animal oils. Where you get the protein is from the vegetable next to the dead steak. If red meat was so good for humans, we would eat other humans.
I have no answer to that. That says it all. That's perfect. I mean, what I teach people to do is really tune into what their bodies need. And when a lot of my patients and clients and people who are listening deal with food issues, which means they're using food to resolve a psychological problem, which we're also programmed to do, right? Oh, don't feel that, have a cookie. And then we end up with a bunch of, you know, people who don't know how to feel their feelings, and they don't know why they're reaching for cookies or ice cream to feel better. But once you can resolve the psychological aspect of that, I think it's just so important to get in touch with what does your body need. And it seems to me, as you're talking, that there's something about your vegan lifestyle that helps you do that, helps you get in touch with what does your body need? Does it need protein? Does it need more green vegetables, red vegetables, fruit? What is it that you need? Is that, would you say that's your experience, that you're really learned to be tuned in once you became vegan?
Oh, yeah. I started, my taste buds changed. I started liking things that, and the different vegetables or different things that I didn't like before, like onions. And I like onions, but I used to have to, you know, like people, I like onions, but they have to be cooked this way. Anytime I hear one of those people, too, like, I like this, but it has to be like this, or it has to be like that. I check everything else they're saying, too. Because as you said, I became a master of habit change. And I realized most of the things we do are all habit change. And so I pay attention, and I always wonder why we're running at that and how they're running at that. And I go, why does it have to be? Why do I like mushrooms now? Is my body requesting that? And then when I eat something and you see it, like I go to Sun Cafe, and I literally think about the kale shake. I can go to, you know, I can go all these different places and know different foods I would have never eaten before. My brain is stuck to.
Now, you mentioned habit change, and I'm sure a lot of people are interested in how do you change a habit? What do you do when you know one thing, but you still do, you're in the habit of doing something else? What is your recommendation for making that shift into doing what you know you should be doing?
And making the shift.
Yeah, how do you create habit change?
How do you create habit change is you literally go into it, recognize it. So when you recognize that you run into a situation, I give you an example. You'll have somebody say something like, well, I always get to the point, and then let's start with relationships. Let's go away from food for a second. Well, every time I get to a point, then I sabotage myself and I kind of ruin it because then I start tripping and wondering this and this. So that means they've done it more than one time, two or three times. So I know it sounds really crazy, but the doctor used to say, every time I do this, doc, it hurts. The doctor would say, don't do that. Everybody would laugh at the joke. But literally, don't do it. Like, we go in and we find out the reason for the sabotage, not a blaming situation. We're not blaming anybody. We'll go in and find out, well, maybe the reason you're feeling about abandonment is because you've been abandoned and you feel you need to continue being in that situation. You need to continue to be abandoned. So, in doing it, you become the one who leaves people, which leaves you abandoned.
That's
even though you may have left, you're the one. So let's change that way of doing it. What habit, what form, what scent, what water, what clothing, what everything that sets off those triggers, let's change those triggers. Let's abandon those triggers. That's how you change a habit, is you do it and you do it and you do it the other way.
But
once
you have
you get
to
it done that way. Yeah,
you have to realize, I think you made a really important point because it was the psychological piece. You got to realize why. So this losing weight but then gaining it back, or that example that you gave, which can certainly resonate to a lot of people who are listening right now. You know, I find that people, maybe they're afraid of being objectified, or they're afraid of turning into somebody else, or they're afraid of something. And so unless...
Afraid.
Unless you deal with that fear.
That's it right there. Like, what are you, what we call, like, in when you're doing, what I heard, when you're doing rehab, and they talk about fear, false evidence appearing real. Like, if you don't have any facts, what are you afraid of? So now you have to go back. The reason you're afraid is because you've been programmed to think the worst first. It's the craziest thing about the people who are the most successful. And they say that are the ones who took the risk, meaning the ones who said, this is what I'm going to do and not look backwards. Even if it's like when somebody says, I'm going to become a singer, or I'm going to make records. Right. But they're not Michael Jackson. It doesn't mean they didn't do what they said they were going to do. You can make a record. You can sing in a lounge. You can sing at school. Right. You just have to be specific to the universe what it's going to be. And then you have to literally make that a habit. You have to make it, just like a habit has you doing the wrong thing, make a habit have you do the right thing.
Yeah, and
be a habit of, yeah, being on time and being at the radio station where you're not supposed to be driving around.
Now,
that a habit.
Come on now. I told everyone you were stuck in traffic. Let's go with that story.
Oh, yeah, no. Traffic of my life.
Well,
you see, I posted it on Instagram. I couldn't wait to be on your show again.
Well, you're on the show. I'm so glad about it, and I love that even though you come from a totally different perspective, you still go to something psychological. And I often say, hey, it's not logical. It may not be logical what you're doing, but it's psychological. There's a reason you're doing what you're doing. And when you figure out that, then you can address it, and then you can make a different choice. So,
yeah, all the choices. No mistake. There's no such thing to me as a mistake. The only time you have a mistake is if you made a choice, it didn't turn out like you liked it, or it didn't turn out to be the way you thought it should be, and then you repeat the choice. That's a mistake. Everything else is just choices. And you have choices. Everyone has them. Everyone has a choice to make. You kind of know the outcome of certain things. You know? Like, people know the difference between right and wrong, death and life. You know it. Innately, you know it.
If you listen to it.
It's like, it's psychological. Like, when people talk about gaining weight, we go into weight gain. It's a lot of it has a lot to do with what you eat, but most of it has to do with what you think.
That you are speaking my language. Absolutely. That's, you know, when I say I help people lose weight without dieting, it's because it's not what you're eating that's the problem. It's what's eating at you. And when you deal with what's eating at you, everything changes. Now, I want to switch gears again.
Yeah.
I want to switch gears again because I want to ask you about another misconception, a really interesting documentary. I had no idea about this, but a misconception is that vegans are all white people. So tell us about the documentary, The Invisible Vegan.
It's so crazy. Because of our culture and because the way things are here in America, it's always been put on to us that our foods were tasty, high fried, laced with butter and milks and sugars and tons of sodium. Very true. Very true. But a very large part of it is when we came over with our African cultures, we did things with more vegetables. There wasn't a lot of catching and killing. But people think that that's the truth. And then I had to explain to most people of color that the foods we eat are the foods that we call our cuisine, soul food, is really slave food.
Mm.
And it's the food of pig guts, chicken wings, pig feet, cow tail, cow tongue, chicken gizzards, all the things that were being thrown away from the big house were being scrapped up by the slaves. Jambalaya is a form of it. And they believed that these are, it was good and it was tasty. But they didn't realize the taste that they got in the collard green when they did use the bone of a cow was nothing but seeping marrow from the bone, which was a salty, bloody taste in the collard greens. They didn't realize that we have been literally the ones who were pushing how to eat, which way to eat growing up, because we only ate slave food. We didn't have the chance to eat what they call fine cuisine. But these, when I say invisible, we look at it, we always talked about it. We talked about, if you look at the food from in Cuba, you look at the food from Jamaica, you look at the food in the Caribbean, it's a different way. It's a different way they seasoned it. And I tell people, I said, if you think chicken is so good, eat it raw. It's not. It's the seasoning, the jerk chicken that goes with it as you go further south or in the Caribbean area. Those Africans that descended there, those were the spices that they were looking for. I also explained to them why there was slavery. They were still looking, why Christopher Columbus even went this way. He was looking for the spices in India. They got the spices from... from down in South America. So it's understanding and paying these people. You're saying, if you see a black guy talking about being vegan, he talk about, I'm invisible, you're not black, because you're not eating fried chicken. And in 1988, KRS-One, the rapper, even said, I'm not like the other rappers that walk around, you know, eating chicken and watermelon. And what he was meaning was, I'm not that guy going around eating all this food and acting crazy and thinking of the lesser of myself. Not saying eating chicken and watermelon make you lesser of yourself, but the mentality we have as black people. And he said, no chicken, no beef, no hamburger. To me, that's self-murder. That was 1988.
Mm. Wow.
So when you even know a rapper was even talking this way and pushing this lifestyle at the point, black people get caught in the idea that if you don't have this, this is going to happen. Like Thanksgiving, right? Everyone talks about how, you know, it's Thanksgiving and the family gets together and this is what, but really, it's a whole different symbol. And so we're going to explain what happened, that this invisible vegan that people are not paying attention, that black people are thinking it's not part of our culture. It's 100% our culture. But the only time we ever had the other stuff is when it was stolen. So you had to have succotash, and you had to have okra, and you had to have, literally you would have rice, if they can get rice. But it was always, I go back to rap. Sir Mix-a-Lot said beans and rice didn't miss her, meaning she was healthy. She had all the curves in the right places, so she ate beans and rice. That was the protein. That was our staple. So that's why I said I can prove to him that if you always eat in this way, you just, as time changed, you started throwing on dead animals or so much of it.
It's really interesting. I can feel myself thinking about that turkey tomorrow with increasing dread. Blah. I heard
what
something.
What do you think the turkey is feeling?
I heard a great, you know how there's always a turkey that's pardoned. So I heard on NPR they were talking about some family got a live turkey and they were going to kill it for Thanksgiving, but they were going to like fatten it up before they killed it. And they started noticing that this turkey like responded to them like a dog. Like it would if you talk to the turkey, it would sort of squawk back. And it had this personality, and they ended up falling in love with this turkey who had the personality of a dog because it's a living creature. And they ended up, you know, keeping it as a pet. So that was a very sweet story. Yes. I love that story.
That's a good story. But I say to folks, man, like, you know, I wind up not being too pushy. Anthony Allen, my publicist, really gets when I get too pushy with it. So she's my barometer on, you know, not being a vegan snob. But I say this, people are really going to start paying more attention to animal rights when they pass the law that you can eat dogs in America. It's going to stop everybody from eating meat. As soon as they pass that law in China and in certain parts of Asia, and they pass a law that we can now kill and eat horses. They don't have to take them to Mexico to kill them to sell them. They're starting to eat horses now. So 30% of the meat you're going to get in your all meat is horse meat.
I'll tell you, I was in China a few years ago, and in some restaurants they have a picture of the animal next to, because no, in case you can't read Mandarin, they have a picture of the animal next to the cooked dish. And I can tell you that turned me instantly into a vegetarian on that trip, because there's nothing like seeing some cute little, you know, Bambi eyes looking creature looking out at you next to a plate in which it's all cooked up with string beans to make you say no thank you. So I don't think you're pushy. I think you're passionate. Are you still there, John?
Well, yeah, John? I'm here.
Oh, you're
I'm
still
here.
There. Yeah.
I'm with you.
Okay. See, I'm passionate too. Like, yes, I want people to know they can change their lives. They can change the way they relate to themselves. They can change the way they eat. You know, change is possible. And as Nelson Mandela said, it is always impossible until it is done.
Wow. I remember that.
And he should know.
You know, I got to meet him, Dr. Nina.
No.
I got to meet Nelson Mandela.
Tell us about that.
He was on a tour in America, and he had come into Detroit, and I literally went to Detroit Pistons and said, you know, he was, back then, GoFundMe was go around and ask for money. So, and he was on his tour, and I got a Detroit Pistons jacket and hat, and he loved it because he's a big sports fan. And then Isaiah Thomas was there with me, and I got to listen to him speak at the old Tiger Stadium. I'm telling you, it was a trip, because when you're around certain people, you know, you feel the energy. And this dude definitely was, he was a powerful, powerful man. Just being, knowing all the things he's gone through, and was smiling every time somebody saw him.
And we can all be powerful. You know, we can, I think that what you're teaching people and what you're helping them see, and me as well, we are telling people you can be powerful. You may feel powerless over your life, over food, over whatever, but you can find a way to harness your power and change your life. It really is possible.
There you go.
Okay, now I want to...
So we got any calls?
You know what? I can't take calls because if I take a call, I did get a few calls, but I had to ignore them. Sorry, people who called in. Because if I take a call, I'm going to drop your call because just the way it's set up. So you just have to talk to me for another, you know, 15 minutes.
No problem. You know what? Let's do it again next week, part two.
You're on. We will do it again. But wait, I want to switch gears again. Talk to us about cannabis.
Yeah. Couldn't wait to have this conversation. So this is the deal. When I was a young athlete, I didn't drink, smoke, didn't do any of that stuff. And then when I turned 36, I had my first experience with cannabis directly. I'm sure I had contact before. But then I got my feet operated on in 95. And they gave me Vicodin. And I was on the best damn sports show, period. And I couldn't perform, meaning they would ask me a question and I would, like, take a couple of seconds to respond. They thought it was funny. Yeah, 2004. And they thought it was funny. And I didn't at all. And I said, I need something else. And the doctor said, well, I can give you a medical marijuana license. And I said, oh, you want me to smoke weed? He said, well, you want to deal with the pain, they say that helps the pain. And that was all she wrote. Once I then started smoking and using all different parts of cannabis to plant for pain and relief and the anxiety, insomnia. They're not going to tell you this. Most athletes have a really poor, bad case of insomnia because of the worry and the throw-off schedule. So I was always told to learn to take a nap, make sure I take my nap, make sure my nap time didn't get interrupted. But as I went into a regular life, I can't take a nap. So my sleep schedule was totally off. Cannabis changed all of that. And then I got into CBDs, and CBD, which is the cannabinoid, the other part of the plant, not the THC, the part that makes you high, but the one that has all the medicinal, medicinal properties to it. I just decided I was going to be in this business. And my daughter, Tyler, and I got into business. We started Deuces 22. She's the president of the company. She runs it. It's her idea, her plan. But we decided to put our money where our mouth was and come out with the highest premium quality cannabis product. So I'm not selling garbage. If you get it and it says Deuces and it comes from anything from me, it's top of the line, top shelf. In other words, it's loud.
I have a feeling that's everything that you do. Absolutely.
Yeah, why do it, right? If you're not talking, I'm going to go to hip-hop again, Dr. Nina. JG said, if you're not talking big money, what's the point? Like, if you're not talking about being the best or working at being the best, you're wasting time, everyone's time. If you want to rush to get to the middle, you're wasting time. And that's the only thing. We don't have the privilege to waste. It's time. We waste water like it's like it's going to be there forever. We'll get to that conversation again. But don't waste your time. That's right there. That's all you got is your time. So don't waste it. And so if you're going to do something, do it at the highest quality. That used to be the way America was built, right? Remember when we get clothes, they were handmade and they were tough. Our dungarees were tough. It used to be a time, I tell all the youngsters, that Levi's was so strong that you used to be able to sell them for 2 times the price in Russia because nobody can get them. We used to have that mentality in America. So I just decided to have that mentality. Since a lot of things are cheap, I'm just not going to be.
Well, as my friend from Texas has often said, go big or go home. Right?
Mm-hmm.
But I like what you said.
Right.
No one's rushing to be in the middle.
Yeah, nah, well, not even fun. Hey, I remember one time I lost in the championship to the Lakers, and we got all the way to Game 7, and we lost in the last few minutes. It didn't feel any better being second. It didn't feel good. It does not feel good being second, being in last place. No, you work to win. You work to be the best and the hardest you can be. You don't do it to come in second. Nobody's trying to get to the middle.
What is your best memory of playing basketball? What do you miss the most?
Championship. What do I miss the most?
Yeah.
I miss the, believe it or not, I miss the routine. I didn't like the routine at one time, but I missed the routine. They paid me to stay in shape and do what I missed that part of the hustle. Like I had so many different teammates, you know, that I like and I'm cool with. But what I miss is the routine. I miss going to different cities. I would go to comedy places. I know it was a show. So I miss putting on the show. I think that's what it's the biggest thing to me was. When I watch these guys now and everybody, you know, takes it like it's life or death, they forget it's a show. I did. And I miss that.
It's supposed to be fun, too.
Yeah.
Fun to play, fun to watch.
Fun. Yeah. Yeah, if they, and I made it fun. I laugh, giggle, talk smack, all the added stuff because I know, you know, we're just a couple of steps away from being the Harlem Globetrotters, which is not a bad thing. It's a good thing. So, but the Harlem Globetrotters put on a show. It's a show. And so I miss that. I know I trained my whole career to be at the show. That's why it's called the show, too. And I miss, see, it's so funny. I don't remember any one particular game. Like when I watch football players talk about this game and what happened in this play, I don't know how they do that. And when I hear baseball players, I just interviewed Bo Jackson this past weekend for Legends and Leaders event with Tony La Russa. We raised money for Animal Rescue Foundation. And Bo can tell you what inning it was, what game it was, probably what moon was. They know all that stuff. It's just all one big thing to me. And so I don't remember one particular game. I think because I treated every single game the same, like it was going to be my last.
What about the championships? Four championships?
Yeah. Well, I won four. I was in five.
Oh.
But I won four.
Oops.
Yeah, you know,
I left that one out. I'm sorry. Playing
yeah,
in five.
Me too. I do it on purpose.
You don't want to remember that one. But
no,
winning.
No.
Winning four championship.
Yeah. I just remember the cool part is I knew that was a special thing. And I really focused on it. I got Kobe's autograph and Shaq's autograph almost right next to one another on my yellow worker's hat. And I had a hard hat that this guy traded with me. And I got everybody to sign it. And I knew it was going to be an important and a big, big thing. I don't think they did. I don't think they knew they were going to be the people they wind up becoming. You know, I just don't. I saw it happen before. Like, I knew playing with Michael Jordan was a blessing. Like, I knew it. Like, everybody's, oh, I played with Michael Jordan. No, no. I hung out with Mike a lot. So I knew I got to be around the greatness. Like, Michael Jordan doesn't even think he's the greatest player, right? But he has to walk around being the greatest player to ever play. That's a hard...
No pressure.
...to hang out.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So I knew I was amongst greatness. I knew it. So I relished, and I was happy in that situation.
Yeah, it's interesting what you said, that they didn't realize, they didn't know they were going to be the people that they become. They were just doing what they were doing. It's like that, it's sort of a trite expression, but a journey of 1,000 miles starts with a single step. You just have to take that step and the next step and the next and the next, and just think about one step at a time, whatever change you want to create in your life, and not think about the 1,000 miles that you have to walk. And if you just take those steps, hey, amazing things can happen. You can win a championship. You can get the life you want. I mean, it's we have so much power inside of us if we just harness it.
And it's very simple. All you have to do is say, this is what I want to be, and that's what you are. It happens every time. I'm living proof, Doc. I'm from a project in Brooklyn, New York. And my mom, you know, we clean house on Fridays, and she was a presser in the dry cleaning. We worked in a deli around the corner and up the block. I mean, I put forth the effort. I worked it. And now I'm sitting here talking on the phone to you about things that they consider to be the top things that I've done. But to me, I've been working. It's like, man, you're successful, man. I put a lot into this. I worked really hard at this. Like, and I was humbled by a lot of things. So when I see things, I see it so different. I go back to this interview with Bo Jackson. I saw the people serving when you're at a gala, you know, somebody comes down and go, you want red wine, white wine? They put the food in front of you and they go away. And then you ask for more salad dressing. Everybody always asks for more salad dressing. And it's right there in front of you with no problem. And you kind of say thank you. You don't say it really loud because you feel they're doing their job. I was one of those people. So when I see them, like Bo said it, he said every time he sees those people, he looks at them, he goes, I see you. And they go away. He goes, I see you. And they know exactly what it means. Because sometimes you're in a situation where people don't see you. You're part of the furniture. You're part of what's going on. I see it. I don't have that attitude. I don't have that. I'm better. You work for me. Not that I'm even better. You know, I tell people, I said, I just had a really good job. Because I worked for it. I had a really good job. I knew all the sacrifice I made when I was younger was going to benefit me when I got older.
And having things does not make you a good person. But having a lot of zeros in your bank account does not make you a good or better person. Living your life in a way that does good and helps others, or just that you can feel good about, that makes you a good person.
Yeah, Bob Marley said, man, sometimes some people are so poor, all they got is money.
I love it. I love that. Yes.
Man,
exactly.
So poor, all we have was money. That's not it.
So what are you most proud of? What are you most proud of?
Proud of?
Yeah.
Not dying. Making, what I mean that, you know, I'm, a lot of my friends didn't make it past, make it to 21. And those were, some of them was caught in the wrong spot, but a lot of it was life choices. And so I chose not to put myself in those positions. So I'm going to say my life choices of having a plan. I'm more proud that I stuck to the plan, even when it looked like it wasn't going to happen. So I like that the most.
So for everyone out there listening, you know, I think it's just so so striking that what you're most proud of is making good choices in your life that led you to the life you live now. You could have easily said, oh, I'm proud of my four championships and playing in five and all of that. But you're proud of the not what you did or achieved. You're proud of the person you are, and I think that that's a great example for people out there, that and it's never too late to make good choices.
Never. My mom, I say this to I say this to my wife. I say, Natasha, thank you for loving me. And she goes, man, you know, it ain't hard loving you, it's hard dealing with the stuff you do. And I got it. It's because I never wanted to be denied. What's that taste like? What's that smell like? What's that look like? I don't want to get to that point. But I would say, thank you for loving me, because I told you that's how I was. And she goes, yeah, the one thing, when people tell you who they are, you usually think they're just, you know, whatever. She goes, you really know who you are. I said, yeah, man, I like who I am.
Well,
I like who I am. I like what I've become. I like what I've done. I like that. And I tell you, I help so many people without the recognition or looking for it. Like when I see young people, I don't say you got to know what you're doing. Which way I say do it all, but seriously, have a conversation first about what you're passionate about. Like have that conversation with yourself. What are you passionate about? And then maybe you should focus really hard on your passion, and everything else would fall in place. Will Smith, when we were coming up, Will Smith was a rapper from Philly that would back up DJ Jazzy Jeff. This is the best. That's all Will was. Will was like, it was DJ Jazzy Jeff and the Fresh Prince. It wasn't the Fresh Prince and DJ Jazzy Jeff. It was the other way around. But Will has the most determination and push. The only person I've ever seen, and this is crazy I'm even going to make this comparison, is Connie B. Like Will Smith. Will Smith was like, I'm going full speed ahead. And he did. And he became Will Smith. So I like that you could make a decision and manifest it and it come true. I love that. I love that I've done it so many times and I'm still doing it.
And you have a health revolution that you're offering. People can go on your website, johnsally.com, S-A-L-L-E-Y, and they can connect with you and your program and find out more. And because you're so inspiring, and I could just sit here and talk to you for another hour, but unfortunately, we can't do that today.
I got an idea.
What's your idea?
I just got Miracle Springs in Palm Desert. So I'm going to start doing these retreats. Maybe you should come and speak to people who want to start this revolution. Remember, you said one step, right? So
one step.
I'm giving people a chance to come out. We're putting it together now. It should be right at the beginning of the year where you can just start 5 days doing it the way we design it, and then we help you along.
Well,
so if you want to get healthy in 2018, I'm giving you an opportunity.
Well, there you have it. You can cut people out there. You can join the health revolution and hang out with John and maybe me. And get
God
some
willing,
inspiration.
God willing. You see how you put you in the corner, Doc? That's how.
Oh,
you, that's
I'm
how
in.
I get you in the corner.
I'm in.
Okay.
I'm there. We'll talk. Absolutely. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
It was just a pleasure talking to you and getting to know you. And I know that you inspired me, and I'm sure that you've inspired so many people out there. And happy Thanksgiving, and God bless you.
Thank you. Namaste.
Bye.
You're listening. listening to the Dr. Nina Show. You're listening to the Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina on LA Talk Radio. Only on LA Talk Radio.